Hi, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Too.
Well, this week we've got Brendan Nottle in the studio. Brendan is a major in the Salvation Army in Melbourne. He has years of experience trying to meet human need among vulnerable people in the city and to spread the love of God to those who might otherwise think that God had long ago forgotten about them. He also has a very interesting job as chaplain among a group of people who, at least from the outside, look anything but vulnerable, the young men who play footy for the Collingwood Football Club. Welcome, Brendan. Great to have you in.
Great to be here.
Now, I'll come back to the chaplaincy role a bit later, but I have to say right up front that I feel sort of an empathy with you because I'm a supporter of Manly in the NRL. So, right. Like Collingwood, Manly is the team you either love or you love to hate.
Yes.
I think that applies to Collingwood, right?
So absolutely. I've grown a very, very thick skin since being the chaplain. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, we share the good and the pain of that. Now, you've worked for many years in Melbourne with people on the fringes of what's a really stylish happening city, but like all cities, Melbourne has its darker side, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Some people refer to marvellous Melbourne, and you certainly wander around the city and you see that it's all over the place, but there's a murky Melbourne too, and there's sort of this underside to it, and that's really where we invest ourselves.
Yeah, what's the nature of that, that darker side?
Yeah, there's a number of sides to it. I think one that really concerns us is there's a whole range of really dodgy rooming houses that operate in Melbourne, and you have people that are really vulnerable, perhaps come out of prison, or they're desperate to get off the streets, and they don't have very good rental history, or they don't have enough money for bond, so they go into these rooming houses, and they're awful. They should only be accommodating three or four people, and they're often accommodating anywhere between 12 to 16 people, and there's a lot of violence, there's a lot of drugs, and the story that really horrified me was a young mum came in and said that she was living in a rooming house with her six-year-old daughter, and she was put in a room next door to a man that was a sex offender that had just been released from prison, and there were absolutely no checks done. And it was at that story where I thought, geez, we've got to do something here. We can't just sit around and allow this to happen. And that's a really deeply concerning issue for us.
So where do you fit into this then? What do you go in and do?
What we do is we actually went to Collingwood Football Club and we said to them, we've got a really serious social issue happening here. And it's not just about getting a few more houses, nice houses for people. It's actually about taking on the dodgy rooming house operators here to a point where we have the same level of stock that they have. So they have anywhere between 100 to 120 houses. We want to get that level of stock. We've got five, so we've got a long way to go. But what we want to do is get that same level of housing and then actually put pressure on those dodgy rooming house operators and say, yeah, it's commercial pressure. We say, you either lift your standard of housing or you get out of the business because people will stop going to you. They'll start coming to us because we've actually gone to Collingwood and said, can you rent houses in your name that have a really high standard? And we'll put case managers around every single person that goes into those houses. So they have a mental health check, they have a health check, and then our case managers work with people intensively to really get them back on their feet.
And yeah, you can hear the excitement in your voice as you talk about that. What drives you in this work?
Well, I think there's a whole group of people that we'd refer to as the forgotten people of society. They've just fallen through the gaps. And I just find it very moving to be in a position where we can come alongside those people and actually give them a voice and actually listen to them and actually be their friend, because often people say to us, we can't believe there's economic poverty in Australia. Well, there is, but the other form of poverty that really eats away at a lot of the people that we work with is social poverty, where they're completely isolated, they're dealing with huge issues, and they just need people to be their friend. And that's what we do. And you see people respond to that, and it's inspiring, and it sort of drives you to want to do more and more for these particular group of people.
But Brendan, you don't find this depressing work then? Or are there moments where you sort of hang your head and feel overwhelmed by it?
Sometimes, but not often. I think it's more about, we can actually make a difference here, and we are making a difference, and it's inspiring. And I think we've got a fantastic team that are predominantly mid-20s, and they drag me along. I'm an old man. I'm 48, so they're full of enthusiasm and passion, and they actually want to make a difference in people's lives. And it's not about, absolutely not about preaching. It's not about forcing something, a particular ideology down people's throats. It's not about that at all. It's actually about being human and giving people an opportunity to that have been forgotten to get back on their feet and start to live a more productive life.
Are you sort of binding up wounds of broken people, or do you actually see real restoration and redemption?
It's a combination of both. We certainly see redemption and restoration. There was this woman who was about 5 or 6 years ago, was walking up and down the laneway next to our building, and for 2 days she did that. She refused to come in. And she was homeless. She was using drugs, abusing alcohol, and both her arms were covered in scars where she'd been self-harming. And eventually she connected with my wife, Sandra, and Sandra took her out for a coffee and they built this relationship. And it came out over time that this lady had been raped by her father on numerous occasions. And there were particular days where the rapes took place, a Mother's Day, Father's Day, birthday, Christmas Day. And on those occasions, for 29 years after the rapes had taken place, she'd cut her arm as a way of trying to get rid of the bad blood that she believed was within her. And she'd been diagnosed with schizophrenia, but the medication never quite worked. And so when this lady revealed the story to Sandra, Sandra went with her to see her psychologist. And the psychologist said, "We've misdiagnosed you. You're actually suffering from post-traumatic stress. We need to treat you in a different way." And over time, with lots and lots of support, this lady stopped cutting. And she hasn't cut for about 6 years, 5 years now it is. And it's a very, very moving story. And I think when you see the work that you're doing is having that sort of impact on someone, it sort of, it drives you, it motivates you to do more. Yep.
And what do you learn about human nature in the work that you do?
Part of it reminds us that there's some people that are, they've been hurt a lot and they behave in terribly bad ways. And I think I'm referring there to this particular lady's father. But the other thing I learned about human nature is a lot of people that are written off by society have got this incredible resilience, and that's what I learn often from them. This particular lady that I'm referring to, she could have given up a long time ago, but she's on my case. When I come in, I'm having a bad day. She's saying, I won't use the language she uses, but she says, you know, get back on your feet, keep going, we need you to be focused. And she gets around other people and supports them. She's incredible. And I'm amazed at the resilience that she possesses that causes her to get back on her feet and keep going in spite of all that she's been through.
To what degree does your Christian faith sort of inform what you're doing in this?
I'd say it completely informs what we do. To be honest, I think I got tired of just playing church, you know, just going along to church every Sunday and singing nice songs and hanging out with nice people. And I think I got a bit disillusioned by that. I think I was suspecting that there was something much deeper to being a Christian than what I was living out. And I think when I sort of read the stories of Jesus, I actually see in him a person that was deeply passionate about the most disenfranchised and the people that hang around the fringes of society. And I recognised that if I was to be a true Christian, then I needed to be engaged with those that are really just pushed aside and forgotten. And they're really the people that I need to focus on and commit my life to, and that's what I've done.
We often hear people say that society would be better off if we got rid of religion and got rid of Christianity as well. But I'm sure there's many people around who are really grateful for the work of Salvation Army, the lady that you mentioned as well, and that if we had no more Christianity, then in some ways you're taking away the basis for what the Salvation Army does.
Yeah. I think when you're dealing with really difficult and dark and complex situations where you have people before you that are incredibly broken, I think I'd become pretty cynical. I think I'd become pretty dry very quickly and just give up this particular sort of work. But I think it's my Christian faith that keeps me alive and keeps me fresh and keeps me passionate, keeps me motivated and keeps me driven to engage with the most forgotten. I really believe if I took that out of my life, I don't think I'd last in this role very long at all.
But it's also something that drives the Salvos to do what they do as well, right? It is important for your own faith, but it's something that actually inspires the work of the Salvation Army to look for the forgotten people, as you say.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we believe that actually comes from the example of Jesus. That's what he did. And there's story after story where he engages with the most disenfranchised and the forgotten. And the rest of society says, don't engage with that particular group of people or that type of person. And he just cuts right through that and engages with them. And that's really the driver for us. That's the motivator for the work that we do.
troubled youth can be a bit of a challenge. You deal with youth a lot, and I guess you're trying to get to people early in their journey and help them go on a better track. Is that part of what you're doing as well?
Yeah, we've got a youth bus that goes out four nights a week, right in the heart of the city of Melbourne, and they work with 70 to 100 under 25s a night. That's a pretty chaotic night down on the bus. All sorts of things happen. And we, you know, we had a young boy, 17, just appeared. We'd never seen him before, and he turned up with a box cutter and held it to his throat and said he wanted to end his life there. And we worked really hard to try and sort of talk him down, and we couldn't. And we ended up having to get the police involved, and he got capsicum sprayed and taken off to a hospital and was in hospital for 3 weeks. But what we did was we continued to just invest in that young guy. So we visited him regularly, we took him out, and we just built relationship with him. And over time, he started to change. And he's ended up recording a song with us where I think there's only one word in the song. I think that's the F word. That's the only word that appears. But we had a night where we launched the CD and 70 people turned up, and he sat behind a desk and he signed his CDs and he signed posters. And it was just fantastic to see a young guy that had basically given up, wanted to take his life. And because of the investment of a group of people, he was at a point where he was just loving life. And young people, they're difficult to work with, but I think at the end of the day, what they need is people that are prepared just to hang in there and never, ever give up on them.
Well, there's lots of different ways to say that word, and at least he wasn't going to forget the lyrics, right? Now, on that, I think this is a good point to turn to your other role, which is working with these sort of superstars of Australian winter sport, Collingwood Football Club. What's the nature of your work there? Because there's a link, isn't there, between the youth and then what you do with Collingwood?
Yeah, definitely a link. I think for me, I realised pretty quickly that if you're down there wanting to pray with young footballers or read the Bible to them, you're probably going to get shown the door fairly quickly. So you've got to look at different ways of engaging with them. And I said to a number of them, would you like to come out on our outreach van that goes out five nights a week, and we feed between 90 to 110 homeless people a night around the city. And it's just been incredible to see the impact that that's had on the footballers. So I think their values get challenged. I think living in a bubble as they do gets really challenged. And it was amazing to have three footballers come out one night, and they saw a 15-year-old come up to the van at 11:30 at night and say, I'm desperate for accommodation. And I did the ring around of refuges and hostels, couldn't find anything. So we had to wrap him in a blanket, put him in a safe place and say, come in tomorrow. And these footballers were outraged. And they said, that's disgusting. It shouldn't happen in Melbourne or anywhere else in Australia. And so they got together and got funding together through their contacts, raised $3 million, built a youth refuge in Melbourne, which is just sensational. So they accommodate 21 homeless people, and they've got training programs and mentoring programs happening there. And so that's what we're saying to the footballers. Come out, have a look, understand that you're a very influential person. You're a very connected person. So use it to make a difference in society.
You've mentioned how influential and how connected they are, and I guess you know, they're really young, they're successful, everyone wants a piece of them, right? Do you find that they're open to spiritual questions as well, as particularly because of, you know, their contact with Salvation Army?
Yeah, I think for a lot of them, they want to be successful, and they want to be successful physically and emotionally, and they want to be mentally tough. But they also understand that there's a need to develop themselves spiritually as well. But it's difficult to engage with them around spiritual issues when you're trying to force that upon them. And so I find that when I'm out in the outreach van with them, and we're just relaxed and we're just talking, those sorts of questions inevitably come up. And we've had some most amazing conversations in the van because I think there is this spiritual yearning amongst most people. And AFL footballers, superstars, they're not immune to that search either.
So one final question on that. What do you hope to add to the lives of these young, successful footballers?
I think there's probably two things. I think one is just reminding them over and over and over again that they can actually make the world a better place if they're actually able to get to a point where they take the focus off themselves and start to put some emphasis on caring for others. And I've seen that happen, and they've had a significant impact. I think the other thing that I really want to do is just encourage them to be people that aren't all consumed with their football career. It's easy for them to get caught up in that space, but to understand that you know, through their connections and relationships, they can actually start to make a significant difference in the world as well.
Well, Brandon, it's so good getting your thoughts on all of that. Love to talk further. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.